Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am once again AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm that control operator for the Linemark Technical Net. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we gather together in front of our radios to inform each other, learn from each other, and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. on New Year, 2025. I hope it's a good year for all of us. And again, I thank you for all coming. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay, if you have an email to send me, that would either be for what we used to call mailbag questions, or some questions that you normally ask during the technical net, but you might not have access to the radio during the tech net. So you can email them to me. If it looks interesting, we could discuss it. You can listen to it either on the internet stream or the archive files that are available. Or if you have a TechNet puzzle, a technical puzzle that's interesting but isn't too overly complicated, it's a good thing to use to kind of stimulate discussion. We've used it very well, but they're as rare as hen's teeth. Or if you have technical expertise in something that's popped up in the news and you'd like to share it with us all. Or if you'd like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some NASA space-related story. Of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But you can contact me as well. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. As always, throughout the week, I cut and paste interesting YouTubes or articles, and I make it available. We've opened up a brand new page for 2025. You can still go back to 2024, but we have a year of links for you. So as the year progresses. So if you have insomnia or you're bored or you want to read some interesting articles, type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you up to the new link page. We have a chat site. Sometimes it's busy, sometimes it's very, very quiet. So if you want to go into the chat room, you type in chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll link you to the chat room. Also, as I mentioned earlier, we offer an internet audio stream of the TechNet. We keep it live the rest of the week. So if you're wondering what's going on the Glen Oaks repeater, and you don't have a radio nearby, but you have an internet service provider connection, you type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the audio stream. As I also mentioned earlier, MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It has many years' worth of Linemark TechNets, so as far back as September of 2006, so please avail yourself of it. It's amateurradio.tv. So that's the usual links. I'll drop for a second. I'll come back and tell you what we've got planned for tonight. Okay, it's going to be a standard operating technical net. I won't have any particular words of wisdom up front at the top of the net, although if things get kind of quiet, I do have a little discussion to make about an interesting new theory that dark energy isn't the thing, really. It's just a postulate. It hasn't been proven. It's an interesting thought, and it has historical ramifications. So hopefully sometime tonight, if we have an extra 5-10 minutes, I'll bring that subject up, or unless someone wants to bring it up themselves. So we're going to go directly to questions and topics and comments, and we'll take a list. Please, if you're interested in being part of this, I hope you're listening right now, because sometimes what happens is people delay their listening to 8:30, 9 o'clock, 9:30, and then they feel as though they weren't heard properly because they couldn't get on the list at 8 o'clock when the net begins. So please try and come here on time and put your name on the list, then you can go off someplace. We've had cases where people put their name on the list, and when we get to them, unfortunately, they're elsewhere and they're not able to participate. So, 10:50. Paul, WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report until approximately 11 p.m. I will return and tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So, if the laws of physics continue, and my shack is working right, and the repeater is working right, and we don't get any French weather reports from Canada, hopefully we will have a very enjoyable experience tonight as usual. So with that in mind, we're open for business. If anyone has any questions, comments, or topics for discussion tonight, preferably let's start with some things that are amateur radio related, since this is an amateur radio net. Please, hit that push to talk and say hello.
And to HCN, I'm radio related at first.
West recognized. Anyone else care to put their name on the list for tonight? Once again, we're probably in the same situation that we almost always are, where people who are interested in participating and asking questions or making comments or bringing up topics haven't gotten around to turning their radios on yet. And, you know, when they finally get to do that in about 10, 15, or a half hour or an hour, they're going to say, geez, well, why are we talking about this subject? Why are we talking about my subject? Well, the reason why is because you're not showing up at 8 o'clock or even 8:07. I considered giving the little discourse into a possible reason why dark energy doesn't exist at the top of the net, but I decided ultimately that you know, I probably would want a slightly bigger audience. Some people are interested in things like dark energy. Some people aren't, I understand. But we kind of try and stretch the reins. We you know, we go from simple to complicated throughout the evening. And although it's not perfect for everyone, I hope we kind of touch base with a lot of different people's interests. So once again, I'm giving you a little bit more opportunity to wake up, turn on the radio, and say, oh, yeah, I got a question, or I got a comment, or... yeah, I'd like to discuss so-and-so, or such-and-such. Anyway, once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net. If anyone else has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
Back control.
Hey, D-Y. Yes, this is Roy. I have a comment, a question. Peter Bravo from Alpha Golf, Paul John, down in the Cape Coral, Florida.
Okay, well, very nice. We've got a quadruple. So, you know, I'll ask the people out there to kind of pause a little bit, ID yourselves, and then break and listen to see if your signal is clear or you're talking over someone else, and then I'll take all your lovely names.
Back and talk. Alpha Charlie 2, Papa Lima, Jeff.
Jeff recognized. Someone else want to try?
This is N1, YDY.
That's a go. King Bravo 2, Alpha Alpha, John.
Okay, we got a lot of people. I'm sure, Wes, you won't mind if we drop you to the bottom because, well, you have so many interesting topics. You're going to take up a bit of time there.
No problem at all.
Okay, I had to do a little bookkeeping here. Okay, Jeff, what's your question or your comment for tonight? And happy New Year, by the way, to everyone out there.
ACTPL. All right, Roy, happy New Year to you. Hope your holidays were satisfying and relaxing. Back to work on Monday, of course. Question, let's see, I was on, just browsing through Facebook and kind of dawdling around and saw a ham radio post that someone was using a spectrum analyzer and was doing some fairly accurate measurements of frequency shifts with respect to time, and was claiming that they could analyze a Doppler shift of a moving vehicle. I think someone was a mobile station. And it got me to thinking about Doppler shift and sort of spectrum analyzers and what have you. And I've done, you know, a little bit of that stuff, frequency, FMT, frequency measurement test on the air. And it got me thinking about what would be the extreme case of Doppler shift, and of course that would be talking to satellites or distant traveling space devices. And I kind of wanted to ask you or anyone else really on that, how that's corrected for and how it's tracked and what we can actually learn from it. So kind of a just a question about Doppler shifts and receiving, I guess, in various modes as well. AC2PL, back to that.
AC2GS, that's an interesting topic. My guess would be that as far as amateur radio operators are concerned, their most severe cases where they have to take it most into effect is satellite tracking. You know, as you're trying to relay through a moving satellite, at first it's coming towards you and it's shifting in one frequency direction, and then it gets overhead and starts to shift in the other, and you have to be sort of nimble with the VFO settings on your radio in order to not drop out of its bandpass. But I'm curious, because I know there are people actually out there that love to play with satellites, and I'm wondering how much of a pain in the backside it is to deal with Doppler shift. Of course, it depends upon the orbiting velocity of the satellites. The faster the orbiting velocities, the more of a pain in the backside it is. So if anyone out there is playing around with satellites and dealing with Doppler shifts, or even dealing with Doppler shifts for other reasons, please feel free to hit that push to talk and add to the discussion.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I haven't done satellites in, I can't remember when. You know. But when they're coming over the horizon, you know, and they're coming towards you, whichever Oscar you're trying to work, you know, the frequency is going to be, you know, higher, you know, as it's coming towards you. You know, and then if you have a beam antenna and you turn your antenna in the other direction, you know, it might be an 8-minute pass or something, and you're going to turn your antenna the other direction, and you're going to, change your receiving frequency. You know, it's going to be lower frequency. And I guess you would just have to get used to that. And you'd be able to hear it, you know, if people are working those satellites when they're coming over, you'd be able to hear the difference. You know, even without transmitting, you get a good feel of what's really going on back to Earth.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think, there are two kinds of guys who do satellites. One who have an endless budget, who can just key in computers to do all kinds of frequency adjustments and azimuth adjustments and such, and other guys just sitting there with some handy talkies in one hand and some Yagis in the other. And, you know, I think practice for those guys is to learn how to rub their stomach and pat their head at the same time. So I'm just curious what degree of nuisance that might turn out to be. I probably would not enjoy the experience. You know, there are only so many dials I like to turn simultaneously as I move beams around in my hands. You know, but there are guys out there who love a challenge. comment? I'm willing to bet there must be a couple of guys who were into satellites listening tonight, but, you know, maybe they just like to listen. Jeff, do you do much in the way of satellites?
ACTPL. No, I don't. I've read a lot about it, and, you know, I've listened to various people making the contacts, you know, posted up on YouTube or what have you. It looks fun. It looks fascinating, and I would be on the low budget side that you're talking about, just like winging a prayer, hoping to point the Yagi in the right direction. But yeah, you know, I listen a lot on HF and talk once in a while at DX, and it's, you know, you do get a sense of, at least on sideband, how someone sounds if you're not exactly on their frequency. And of course, it's not channelized, so you kind of have to match frequency to whoever is transmitting it, and you're trying to reach. I don't know if it's, I kind of forget what it sounds like on FM, and I know CW, of course, it's just going to be a tone shift. But I'm wondering what the magnitude would be for something coming at you, you know, whatever it is, 10,000 miles per hour or something like that. What it would sound like on FM, which I guess is the mode that people use up and down on the different channels. Like whatever it is up, isn't it a UHF-VHF split?
I would tend to think it's not a heterodyning effect like amplitude modulation, just the very nature of frequency modulation. But it would just be kind of a distortion of the audio, and then finally you would just drop out of the conversation when you lost capture, because you're dealing with a different carrier frequency at that point.
Yeah, Roger. All right, I'll listen to see if anyone else chimes in. And again, if Paul wants to comment on what he thinks the magnitude of the shift might be, that would be interesting as well, particularly from you know, the NASA sort of position. AC2PL, back to NASA.
Okay, very good, Jeff. Yeah, Paul, I mean, you know, NASA has to deal with a lot of things traveling at high velocities. So, you know, if anyone is affected by Doppler shift communications, it's NASA.
Yeah, oh yeah. Not so much with the communications from the space station, because that's really not, you know, they all have antennas. Well, they do have it in case they need it, but pointing directly down. They're pointing up. They're hitting the TDRA satellites, the tracking data relay satellites. There's been a total of 11 of them that have been launched over the decades, and there's still 7 functioning. So they're going up to 23,000 miles above the Earth at a geostationary orbit. So that satellite is, in relation to the Earth, is always in the same place. So you don't have it. Then they're using that as a repeater, you know, and then that's retransmitted down to Earth. So there's no, you know, no real Doppler shift for the space station. But you take a mission where the Artemis, for instance, that just went up two Decembers ago, that went to the moon and back. When they communicate with that, they take that into consideration when it's going away from Earth to the moon or coming back. You know, the deep space network that's communicating with that spacecraft. You know, it takes that into consideration, and you know, any of the spacecraft that are heading off to the moon or Mars for that matter, deep space probes. So, you have more of a problem, you know, in the outer world, you know, with satellites trying to communicate with something that's coming down on 70 centimeters. There's going to be a shift. Remember the, you know, the shift, the actual shift that would be involved with that. I'm sure that's on the internet. You can probably find that 1, 2, 3. But let me drop it a second. When I did it, it was on HF. You went up during the old days before you had a lot of satellites with, you know, working on 70 centimeters. The one I did was you transmitted up on 10 meters, and it was coming back, I believe it was coming back on 2 meters at the time. But, you know, I didn't have a problem with that. You know, I didn't even notice it. With whatever frequency they said it was on, it just wasn't there. But I think you have to compensate, let's say, on 70 centimeters, and it's coming across at, what's the satellite frequency? 430, 4, something like that. Whatever frequency it is, if you're looking for that bird coming over the horizon, you're going to have to turn your dial up a little bit higher, because the frequency is going to be a touch higher. And whatever that number is, I think you can put in Doppler shift for 70 centimeters, you know, for a low Earth satellite, you know, and they'll tell you. And then you listen for it coming over the horizon with that tuned up a little bit. I think 500 hertz or something like that, but there is a difference. This way you can hear it right away when it comes over the horizon. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I'm sure there are more than a few websites that have the formula hard-coded into Java someplace, and you can just type it in. You know, it's dependent upon what your starting frequency is and the relative velocity and, you know, direction that it is in relation to you, the observer. But it's one of those things I recall reading about in the weird descriptions of satellite guys, of all the things that they had to keep in mind and manually adjust for in real time. Again, unless you like to throw a lot of money at problems, and then you could run it through a computer and an automated azimuth rotator and such, and you just sit back and it's about as exciting and challenging as FT8. So, you know, different people like different challenges. But I haven't really heard the NASA complaint. I guess they felt that it was a little too technical for the usual, PR kind of pablum that NASA likes to hand out to regular folks like ourselves. So one of these days I'm going to have to kind of do a deep search for what NASA has to say about Doppler shifting in their communications and how much of a pain in the backside it might be for them, or if it, again, they just use computers and they don't worry about it.
Yeah, one other comment about the space station, Roy.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, they do ARIES, amateur radio, on the International Space Station all the time. Now, that's different. You know, they're not going through the geosynchronous satellites like NASA is doing. When they're doing the school contacts, they're going direct to people's 2-meter setup. And I've never heard of any problem with the Doppler shift. When we did it, you know, in St. Joseph's school out here in Maconkma for the International Space Station back in 2017. That was on 2 meters, but it wasn't a direct contact. They were going through the telebridge system, so they were transmitting. They have different places around the Earth that use the telebridge system. So in our case, the transmission from the space station was going down to California, and then California through the phone lines were connected to the school, and that's the most common way that they do that. But there are some schools that do set up the station. You know, they'll put the antenna on a roof and go through the trouble of going, you know, making a direct contact. But anytime I've read that, I don't remember them saying that they had to consider Doppler on 2 meters, you know, whatever frequency it was, they left it that way. For the whole, you know, it's usually a six or seven minute pass. And they never change the frequency. So, and then when I listen to the, you know, you can actually get on the internet and listen to these schools, some of them talking to the astronauts. You don't hear a frequency change as they're talking, you know. Questions are going back and forth. Usually they get about 12 questions in for a pass, you know, for a school event. And I just don't hear the, you know, you don't, you know, you would hear the voice going higher and low. I've never heard that. So I don't think it's a problem with 2 meters. But it might be with, I think it is with 70 centimeters. Back to you, Roy.
Comment?
Yes, please comment.
Basic to kill. Well, okay, so let's take an extreme case of, say, the Parker probe, and maybe that kicks it up a notch. And what do we know about the communications with that device?
N2 AM with satellite info.
Please.
Yeah, okay, this is N2 AM. My name is Dave. I'm in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, and I've been listening for the past couple of minutes. I've been active on the birds on and off since the mid-1980s, and if I can just make a couple of comments that'll straighten a few minor misconceptions out.
Sure.
Okay, very good. Well, first of all, there are two. If you're talking about communications through the birds, what are referred to as the easy sats are FM up and down, 2 meters up to the satellite, and 70 centimeters down. Now, the higher in frequency you go, the faster the Doppler shift and the wider the frequency of the Doppler shift. On 2 meters, if you're talking, let's say, to the shuttle on Simplex, the Doppler shift is about 3 kilohertz. So, essentially, even on an FM radio, you may just have to adjust one or two frequency steps to obtain Doppler shift for the entire pass. You can, in fact, leave it on the nominal frequency, and you'll do fine with the current generation of satellites. The FM birds, which many people refer to as the easy sats. Let me drop it. The other type of satellites use linear transponders. They don't repeat just a single frequency up and down. They repeat a whole range of frequencies. Essentially, it is an analog bent pipe, if you will, that's maybe 30 kilohertz wide or 100 kilohertz wide, etc. And that's where single sideband, CW, and the digital modes are used. Then you have to think about Doppler because of the nature of single sideband. On 2 meters, the Doppler only comes down to about maybe 3 kilohertz. But as you go up in frequency, the Doppler is higher and faster. So on UHF, it's much faster. And you go on frequencies above that, the Doppler is much faster. But the current generation of satellites and the current orbital planes that are used, it's low Earth orbit. So the VHF and UHF stuff, it is suggested that you do your Doppler adjustments on the higher frequency. And so in other words, you leave your frequency, whatever it is, uplink or downlink, let's say 2 meters, it's the nominal frequency of the satellite. Leave it on that nominal frequency throughout the pass. When you get to the higher frequencies, like 70 centimeters, then do your adjustment, particularly if you're talking on the linear satellites. And just a couple things on tracking. Let me drop it. If you want to actually track a specific satellite, there is a website called n2yo.com, which has loads of good information on tracking satellites, etc. There was also a very good program if you're an iPhone user. Cost about 10 or 11 bucks, but if you're well, it's well worth it. It's called GoSatWatch.com. I'm sorry, GoSatWatch. It's available through the iPhone App Store. Unfortunately, there is no Android allegory made by that particular company, but I'm sure there are other programs for the Android. But I recommend if you're an iPhone guy, you could get a program called GoSatWatch. So this is kind of a wide overview in general terms. Hopefully I'm not taking up too much of that time, but just wanted to fill in a couple of bits of information. This is N2AAM.
No, I thank you. I appreciate it. You have a lot more experience in it than we do. I'm aware that there are at least one and probably more for pay PC programs. I think I downloaded it and played with it because it had a trial time. I don't really have a need to know where satellites are in the sky, but it's not that difficult to find a program that does that. And, yeah, you have less problems as far as I perceive it, especially with wideband FM than you do with amplitude modulation for things that that have these shifts. Because you're not going to really get to the heterodyning and the frequency shifting with FM. As I mentioned earlier, you just either kind of fall out of the passband or general distortion. Not like single sideband where you start to sound like you're very high-pitched or all of a sudden that you're now a baritone.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. But also, if you go higher up in frequencies like to 1296 or 2.4 gigs or some of the even higher microwave bands, then manual Doppler adjustment becomes untenable. Then you have to go to some sort of computer control, but not many amateur satellites are on those frequencies yet. But that's coming. That's coming in a few years down the road. But if you want to do satellites now, with the current birds that are in orbit, VHF and UHF will be perfectly fine for you. And the Doppler shift, you can do it with remarkably simple equipment and manual hand adjustments. Of course, the ideal way to do it is if you've got, you know, the budget for it, et cetera, go for the computer control satellite rotor in azimuth and elevation, some nice crossed Yagis, and you'll be golden. But to also check AMSAT.org, AMSAT.org for the Amateur Satellite Organization. And that's about it. And 2 a.m. back to that.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Whenever I see ads for the ICOM 9700, I think of guys who want to go high tech as far as satellites are concerned, because I'm sure you're able to pull a lot of those tricks. There's software that can control rotators depending upon the data they have for satellites. And they could feed signals into something like a 9700 and deal with the shifting. So, you know, if money is no object, it's not quite as crazy as some other sub specialties. But it does kind of divide the guys who like to do things manually, who like the challenge, and other people who don't really like the challenge. They prefer throwing money at a problem.
Call, please.
Yes.
Hey, KA2NY, if you could put me in the rotation, I have a question about satellite antenna.
Okay, I guess it's inclusive to the present conversation, so throw it out.
Thank you. I was looking at the M-squared egg beaters, 442 meters. Just curious what people think about them. Some people say they're really deaf. But do they work?
Okay, any opinions out there? N2AAM?
Yeah, okay, this is N2AAM, November 2, Alpha Alpha Mike. Well, the egg beaters will work. They will not work great as a multi-element beam, but you will get a signal up and down from the satellites. You may not be able to get a pass from beginning to end, but the majority of the pass, you will be able to work, and you will be able to hear the signal off the satellites if you've got a good receiver. They will work, but they're not optimal, but they will get you on the air. In fact, if you've got a even a vertical antenna, a standard VHF, UHF dual-band antenna, you go on to one of the satellite frequencies, you will hear at some point of the pass, the horizon to horizon. You may not hear it well from horizon to horizon, but even with a non, if you will, satellite optimal antenna, you will hear your signals from space. You will at some point during the pass. In fact, just recently, a couple of maybe 3 or 4 hours ago, I heard signals from the ISS, just for giggles, sitting on 145.8 with a handheld and a rubber duck. You will hear the signals, but you won't hear it through the entire pass. This is N2AAM back to net.
Okay, very good. Any other questions before we move on?
Follow up.
Sure.
Thanks, I appreciate it. KH1RB. Why are UHF signals so, why on 8 meters the UHF side is so deaf? Why is it the UHF doesn't go as far into space? Is it just burn out, or is it a capture effect, or a multitude of things?
Well, there are a multitude of facts. It's the wavelength is shorter, capture effect. There is, by nature of frequencies, VHF and UHF and into the microwaves are essentially line of sight, but there are differences in line of sight. The higher you go in frequency, the more line of sight you get, and the more critical it is. The Doppler and the I'm just trying to think of a way to phrase it here. The more critical the line of sight issues are, etc., and antenna size and capture effect and so on. That's about the best I can pull out of the head. I'm not the expert, but what I do know, I'm glad to share. Over.
Hey, thank you so much.
Also, keep in mind the concept called free space path loss. As your frequency goes up, your loss over a given distance becomes greater and greater. So that's probably a significant reason why UHF doesn't travel as far as VHF. It's just the free space path loss dependency on frequencies.
To be honest with you, I couldn't think of that term, and that's what I've been, when you said it like that, something snapped in my brain and said, yeah, that's it. That's what I was trying to say, but couldn't think of the term free space path loss. So you hit the nail on the head.
Okay, very good. I mean, I have times where I just forget terms, too. There's so many terms out there.
Okay, this is at 2 a.m.
Okay, very good. Well, Jeff, we really kind of beat that, like a dead horse, didn't we? David recognized, and there was also someone else. So there's someone else. Do you want to repeat your call time, please?
Hi, Roy. Kilo Foxtrot 2 Zulu Zulu, Brian.
Oh, Brian, do you have a comment to make about this subject, or do you want me to put you on the list for later tonight?
Sure, you can put me on the list. I just tuned in. I'm always late to the party, unfortunately.
Okay, consider yourself on the list. David, do you have something to comment to make about this, or do you want to be put on the list for later tonight?
So, Well, I have some questions, but not so important. We can do later or when maybe another time. But my question regarding communications in space, specifically satellites, if I have a vertical antenna, can I communicate with the satellites? Go ahead.
I would say yes. If you have a line of sight with them, you can. An antenna that's not perfectly oriented, and, you know, they're traveling in space, so the orientation of their antenna changes every second. So, sometimes it might be better than others, but I see nothing kind of ultimately limiting your ability to communicate, at least partially. You know, there might be better times and worse times.
To have a clearance and a vertical antenna, it's definitely possible for me to communicate with satellites.
I believe so. David, N2AAM, you're the pro here. What do you say?
Yes, you can. It will not be optimal, but at some point in the past, with the current low-orbit satellites that are out there, you will be able to get some sort of a signal depending on the relationship of the satellite to you, whether it's spinning around, antenna orientation of the bird, and also the antenna pattern of your vertical antenna. But I'll tell you an interesting story. This is an extreme case, but what exactly happened to me one particular satellite pass. I was living down in Virginia a good number of years ago, and I had a fully equipped satellite station 2 meters up, crossed Yagi, 70 centimeters down, crossed Yagi. And I was talking on the SO-50 satellite, which was and still is a low-orbiting satellite, which had about maybe 10 or 15-minute passes. And it was FM up and FM down, and I was talking to a guy, and we were coming to the middle of the pass. The bird was almost overhead from where I was, and just for grins and giggles, I picked up my HT, my handheld with a rubber duck, and transmitted on the uplink to the bird, and the satellite was almost overhead to my location, and I was able to hear myself through the downlink of the satellite. It only lasted maybe about 30, 45 seconds, but it did work. It's not optimal, but if you have a reasonably good vertical antenna, you will, if you set everything correctly and track the bird, you will be able to get at some point a signal into the bird and at least hear yourself or have someone respond to you.
Can I do it on FM? My radio is half duplex. One side can be 2 meters. The other side can be 440.
Okay, this is N2AAM. Well, yes, you can. The ideal thing would be to be full duplex so you could hear yourself if you're making into the bird or not, but yes, you can do it half duplex. I've done it. I've been in portable situations when it can be done. It's not optimal, but if you persist, you will be able to do it.
QSL, well, thank you very much, sir. I'd like to say that I'm going to give it a try, and I'm going to look on the internet for information regarding satellites and a transmission over New York City, and set up my radio so that I can transmit on the correct frequency and receive on the correct frequency. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay, well, I would suggest to you that the best satellite to try for a beginner would be the International Space Station. Now, just mark this down. The downlink frequency, the frequency that the space station uses to communicate in its repeater mode, is 437.8. 437.8. The uplink frequency that you transmit to the space station is 145.99. 145.99. I believe it's 99 or 97. It's been a while since I did it. And the PL used is 67 hertz. 67 hertz. And what you do is you keep your 2-meter frequency on your 2-meter radio on that frequency, and your 70-centimeter U Doppler adjust. So start at maybe 5 kilohertz or 10 kilohertz below the nominal UHF frequency and slowly move up during the band pass. So hopefully that'll help.
Could you repeat the uplink frequency for 440?
No, the 440 frequency is the downlink frequency from the shuttle. You listen on 440 on 437.8. 437.8. You transmit to the shuttle on 2 meters on 145.990 with a PL of 67 hertz.
QSL, I got it, I got it. Yeah, I'll set the radio up for that in the coming days. I'll definitely give it a try. If I'm listening on 437.8, you know, perhaps, you know, I can just leave the radio on for a while, see if there's any signal coming in.
Yeah, that's correct. Leave it on there and leave the squelch very loose. Leave the squelch just below where when you hear the white noise. So put your squelch on very loose and just leave it there. And you can go to and find out exactly when the passes are. You can go to n2wire.com or msat.org and just follow the prompts and answer a few questions, et cetera. You can generate a printout as to when the passes will be optimal for the New York metro area. In fact, you know, you can do that, and that'll square you away. Over.
Got it. 100%. Thank you very much.
Okay, don't want to monopolize it here, but N2AM, back to net control.
Question for Dave, WS2N, Roy.
Yeah, sure. Ask Dave any question you'd like, Paul.
Yeah, Dave, are they still transmitting on 2 meters on 145.800? I mean, they've been doing that forever. I thought you said in the beginning that's what you just heard them on. But yet you're giving out the 70 centimeter frequency. Are they coming down on both frequencies at the same time? That's what I'm a little confused about. Back to you, Dave. WS2N.
That's a good point. And the reason I said that is because until they were doing a special event thing, SluiceGun TV, off of the ISS, where they were transmitting a downlink of 145.8. But when they're not doing that, they're in repeater mode, which I talked about. But the SluiceGun event is supposedly going to end today, so probably has ended or will end around midnight tonight. And they use the downlink frequency of 145.8 for that, and also that is a downlink for school contacts. The repeater is on UHF down and VHF up, so that's why you're confused there, Paul.
Okay, very good. Yeah, because in 2017 when we did it in the school, it was 145, not 800. And that's the one they had forever. And many years ago, back in the early 90s, they had the SARAX program, shuttle amateur radio experiment, before the International Space Station. So they'd have ham radio on the shuttle, and NASA wanted ham to do was, when the shuttle came overhead, listen to 145.800, and if you heard a QSL going on between the space station and any other ham, could be from Jersey, could be from New York, and in my case, if you even heard them, they wanted a report, and then you send it in, and they would actually send you a QSL card back, which even though I didn't transmit up to them, they would send me a card back. That was the Atlantis mission, SDS-45, way back when. Anyway, that's why, where they officially haven't changed that. It's still 145.800 for school. Back to you, Dave. Thanks for the information.
Okay, very good. And I'll take you back some, Paul. Before that, when the Mir space station, the Soviet space station, had its experiment going, they were on 145.55. This goes back to the other gentleman who asked the question whether you can work the space station or a satellite through very minimal antennas. I was able to work the guy on Mir on 145.55 using a
mag-mounted
sheet indoors. So things were just optimal on that pass. I lucked out, and we were able to work each other. So that was U5MIR back in the 90s. So that was even before the days of the ISS, before the ISS existed as we know it today. Back to that control. This is at 2 a.m.
Okay, very good. Thank you, David, so much for your input and your information tonight. See, I knew we had a satellite maven out there, so I thank you very much. Before we move on to anything else, I think I might have heard Frank WB2BXO earlier. So just in case, because he's on Echolink, we quick key far too much on this repeater and on this net. So give a little pause for people on Echolink. So I just want to give it a little pause. And if Frank wanted to say something, he can come on. If not, so be it.
Mr. Chubra, give a little pause for me. WB2BX. That was me. I can give you a couple of comments if you like.
Yeah, sure. I don't want to leave anyone out. I mean, sometimes, unfortunately, I don't catch the call signs, and if too many people are talking simultaneously, I have difficulty recognizing voices to a degree.
W2BC.
Rich, welcome back. Frank is on Echolink and wants to put a couple of comments, and we'll get to you right after Frank, okay?
That's great. I'll be on the side for you.
Okay, very good. I definitely, years ago, I used to walk out on the boardwalk at Brighton Beach about 25 years ago and make satellite contacts with, I think I was using a full duplex HT. I also tried it with two HTs. I don't recommend doing it with a half duplex because you can't hear yourself through the satellite, and chances are you're going to find yourself talking to yourself. When you're using a duck ear, as I was using the rubberized horse whip antennas, it helps to hear yourself and be able to move the antenna around after you're hearing yourself through the satellite. I also, in AAM, may remember this, been on the satellite for years, I made a couple of, I made at least one Sunset Parrot contact. I don't know if anybody remembers what the Sunset Parrot was. Single frequency repeater through the satellite. It, from inside my apartment, and but I can be, you know, one of these class 3 fireproof buildings, I think they call it. You know, there's essentially a Faraday cage with a 3D big gain collinear. You know, those things have gain at the horizon. They are vertical antennas. My 20-watt ICOM FM radio. So, it definitely can be done. And years before that, I got on, and I think it was, I guess, 145.55. For some reason or other, I had that in my radio to call a friend. And there was a U5 MIR. And he heard me. That was with a 6 dB gain collinear on the roof in Canarsie. He heard me, but he missed one letter of my call. And he went below, he went over the horizon before I could give him a fill on the last letter of my call, so I did not get a confirmed contact out of that one. That would have been really cool. Go ahead, Roy.
Well, that's good. You know, the fish that got away, unfortunately. What can you do?
Yeah, but I do have a bunch of confirmed satellite contacts. Yeah, I got tired after a while of running around on the boardwalk, dodging people, trying to make contacts through the satellite. But I did make a couple of them that way anyway. And then I bought one of those arrow antennas, but I just found that a real pain to carry up and down in the elevator and to hold the HT and swing the antenna around and... especially at night, that did not seem like a real fun idea on the boardwalk. But it did work with the horsewhip antenna on the HT. And I don't know why you really can't get a full duplex HT anymore. But you certainly, if you have two HTs handy, you can do it. WB2BXO, back to that.
AC2GS. Yeah, I've read articles where people describe the phenomena of a guy trying to get everything right, you know, with making all the simultaneous adjustments, and I kind of wish there was a YouTube video of someone doing that. You know, it would either fascinate or be hysterically funny. I haven't decided which until I see it. I've never come across it. It might be hiding someplace in the algorithm, but I haven't found it.
Well, I guess it's kind of hard to hold the HT, the antenna, and the smartphone camera at the same time. You kind of need a third hand to do that, I guess.
Or a friend. Or a tripod.
Yeah, I guess that'll do it. I'm actually surprised there are no videos on that. I got the idea that I could actually work satellites with the HT from an article of Ray Soifer. I think his name was pronounced Sofer. No, silent T. I think it was W2RS. Somebody else. Probably remembers where he described making satellite contacts with a full duplex HT. And it was like, hey, that's cool. Let me look and run out on the boardwalk. I downloaded STS Plus, got the path signed, ran out on the boardwalk and made a contact. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's more for the young at heart, you know? I mean, before our get up and go gets up and leaves. So I commend you at least for doing it all. And again, it's sort of a shame that there doesn't seem to be a YouTube, but I'm sure if I search hard enough, I'll find some fragment someplace. So I thank you, as always.